Good evening. I'd like to call the January 15th, 2013 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Ms. Kiefer is here. Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee? Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
The 13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you, Kathy. For tonight, I'd like to ask for an executive session at the end of this meeting to discuss personnel issues and labor negotiations. And Brett, are you? I would. All right, we'll go ahead with a public privilege of the floor. I would like to ask Tommy Beers and then Jerry Gallucci. To address the legislature, you have 3 minutes to come to the microphone, and Kathy will help you keep track of your time. Tommy Beers first. Yeah.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello. I'm Jerry Gallucci, and this is Tommy Beers, and we're here to make sure or remind you about the invitation you received last month to attend an introduction to the community viewing of Race, the Power of an Illusion. I've distributed copies of the letter. And if you've already registered, we want to remind you that it's next Friday, the 25th, at 8 a.m. at the Tompkins County Public Library. If you haven't registered or you've never seen the letter before, you still have time to register. We encourage you to come. We encourage you to sign up with Denise Malone in City Hall, I believe. Her information is on the back of the letter. We're very excited to be part of a movement in Tompkins County to undo or at least start chipping away at structural racism. I hope you all join us in this effort, and I hope you will come to this introductory meeting and preview of the film we would like to see shown or have shown, that will be shown in Tompkins County during the months of March and April. Tommy?
Thank you. Yes?
So our 3 minutes are up, but there's two of us. So I'm going to take the liberty here. And all I wanted to do is, you all got this yellow piece of paper, so let's use it. And this community showing of this film reminds me very much of last year's community read of the Martin Luther King book, Where Do We Go From Here? And we're hoping that this film will also generate that kind of interest among grassroots community members who actually, and there's lots of us that want to jump out there and do something to level the playing field all across the country, all across the world. And so we hope, because you all are in these positions, you know everybody, that you'll find the right people. Look, get this going. Help me with this. Do this, that. So that's all we're asking. And if you haven't done one of the talking circles on race that's run by the MRC, have a crack at it. Man, this is some great stuff. It's just some great stuff. So thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
There's contact information on the back if anybody would like more information, and Tommy's contact and my contact. Thank you.
Thank you. Carol?
Can I just ask them a question?
Yeah, so can you tell us when and where the video will be shown, the parts of the video?
Friday night here.
January 25th, 8:30 a.m. at the Tompkins County Public Library.
Okay, but the full... This is an introduction.
This is an introduction to how the community viewing will take place, and there will be clips or excerpts from the three-part series.
Okay, and can you tell us anything about when the three-part series will show?
Those will be set up around, we hope, at different sites around the county during the months of March and April, so that we can have a community discussion as we did with the community reads, stimulated by this very, very moving and impressive film.
Thanks.
Jim.
So it's safe to say that those dates have not been chosen.
They have not
yet.
Been set.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
We're hoping that every church in the county will want to sponsor a showing of this film. Every volunteer fire department, any community center, that we just do it all over the county. We've got plenty of facilitators lined up. We've got three or four films that can probably be going on at the same time. So we can accommodate any and all requests, I'll bet. I'll just bet. So.
But frankly, we would like your expertise in identifying people, organizations, and sites in your communities that might be able to put this on with the help and assistance of the group that is calling itself Understanding to Overcome, the committee that is putting this together.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming. Are there any other members of the public who'd like to address the legislature? Okay. Go ahead, sir, and just state your name and where you live. Go ahead.
My name is Stanley West McPherson, and I live at 509 West Clinton Street, Ithaca, New York. I'm here about the living wage. I spoke once before. The living wage, we see that people in our community and where we work have to get two or three jobs. Some of them are getting fired. Some of them have newborns, and they can't make it. So we urging that the legislator put something together, resolution, put something in play, because we see what's happening. Mouths to feed sometimes is discouraging, especially we see a lot of newborns, and it's a shame. Our representative, the Workers' Center, he's been trying to go different places to stir things up. I hope he go to Washington. We need a living wage, and we need it now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Hello, my name is Milton Webb, and I work with Stanley, and we work at the Reed Community Center. And there are a lot of people in this town that really need the living wage. There are some people that can't even afford working a 40-hour week, can't afford the things that they need for their children, as far as taking them out places, to the movies, places like that. And it's hard when you're a father or a mother and you can't provide for your child. When you can't provide for your child looks other places. The living wage would really help them a lot. And they would be able to feel like a parent instead of someone who has to say to their child, we can't get that. So we would like for you to look into that very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else like to address the legislature? Thank you. At this time, I'd like to bring up Brett Bossert and Tish Perlman. It is my honor to appoint Tish as the 2013 Poet Laureate for Tompkins County. And I think many of us know Tish from her various community roles and in a previous life, her current radio program. I think, Brett, do you want to introduce the program and the, you know, selection process first?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, it seems like just a few weeks ago I was here with our previous laureate and got to tell you a little bit about all the great things that Gail Holtz-Warhaft did on behalf of the county in the name of her post and poet laureate. And since that time, we held a panel, including Gail herself. Leslyn McBean Claiborne was also on that panel to help review the nominations that we had. I think there were 8 in all for the next Poet Laureate, a number of very accomplished published writers that call Tompkins County home and were interested in really being an advocate for the arts and a voice for the power of poetry to enact change and improve the way that we communicate with each other. And Tish's nomination quickly rose to the top. For all the reasons that I think you probably already know about Tish, what she's done in the community and what she does to help advance social justice, both in Tompkins County and around the country and around the world even. So I'm happy to introduce Tish, and I'm sure she has something to read for you. And she and I have already been meeting and talking about how the next year will shape up for her tenure as our representative of poetry in the county. So here's Tish.
Thank you very much, Brad. Welcome, Woo-hoo. Tish.
Thank you. Thank you. I am still so shocked to get this appointment. I can't tell you how shocked. I don't get shocked by much, but I was very shocked, very honored, very pleased. I love the idea of being able to share the magic and the healing force and the beautiful voice of poetry in this community. Do you want me to just read, or should I just tell you a few things? Or
it's up to you.
Well,
both, I think.
I'll tell you a few things about my road as a poet. I started writing poetry in my 20s into my early 30s, and I would read at coffee houses in Central California, finally up in San Francisco. And I wrote a lot of political poetry. I wrote a lot of poetry for the women's movement and for the LGBT movement and for the Take Back the Night rallies I would go to all the time. And I stopped writing poetry in the early 80s, in my early 30s, when my mother died. I just did not want to deal with the depth and the heartfelt treasures that would come up in the pain. So I stopped writing for almost 20 years, and I never thought I would pick up the pen again. I honestly never dreamed that I would. I went on to broadcasting and political campaigns and political rallies and political organizing. But in 2008, I found out that I was going to have heart surgery for a congenital heart problem that I knew I had, and I thought I would beat the odds. And it was the most harrowing, frightening experience I've ever had in my life, and I did almost die. And it prompted me to start writing again, just out of the blue. It helped me to heal, and it helped me to come back, and it helped me to find my voice again as the poet that I think I lost somehow. And so I've been amazed. I wrote a whole book of poetry. It's called The Fix Is In. It was published by Finishing Line Press last year. And it's all about my experience of having died during heart surgery and come back to show you the way in the places where I had been. So I'm amazed that I'm here, and I'm amazed that I'm writing. And I thought maybe I would quit after I got it all out of my system after this medical thing. But I'm writing about my childhood. I'm writing about my past. I'm writing about my mother. And I'm writing about my travels. I lived in Europe for a while, and I'm writing about my life here, so I'm quite amazed.
Well, we're grateful that you're here for many, many reasons, so thank you so much.
Thank you. And I look forward to giving workshops and giving readings and getting the community involved with this beautiful language. And so I would like to read you a poem. This isn't about my medical stuff. It's not political. This is about my childhood. I was brought up in Southern California, in a little beach town. I think many of you know that. And I just started thinking about how we would drive home along the sea from our events of the evening. And this started when I was really young and went into my teens when I finally left home. So I wrote this poem about it. It's called The Drive Home. We would meet the night with simplicity, slipping into half sleep by the roar of the car engine carrying us into the late hour, city lights twinkling and dissolving, and then the blackness and moon shimmering of the sea.
We trace the miles to home with the radio purring weather reports, news, and rock music. Jarred awake when the engine died, signaling arrival. The foggy sea air whispers the clicking of keys and of lights. A day banished. Prayer. Now I lay me down. Childhood is half awake as it tries on the world. And the world is indifferent as it lures the child toward no known destination. Deep sleep, the long night. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
Anyway, I thank you. Thank you so much for this appointment. I'm going to do the best I can to get the word out about this beautiful language, and I really want to get people to start writing and thinking about writing and reading and you know, finding their voice with this beautiful art and craft. So thank you so much, and you'll be hearing much more from me in the coming months.
Well, come back to the legislature anytime. First and third Tuesdays at 5:30, and. Okay. Don't wait for an invitation, but we also may invite you from time to time.
I would love that. Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much.
So I'll see you around the community. Nice to see everybody. Hopefully I'll talk to some of you soon. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Tish.
Thank you.
I am pleased to see Mary Ann Sumner, the supervisor of the town of Dryden, in the audience, and I hope that means, Mary Ann, that you're going to give us a report.
I can do that.
That'd be great. Welcome.
In honesty, I came to hear Tish, but I can tell you things are going well in Dryden. I thought perhaps, I forget that many of you may not be as in tune to the lawsuit that, against First Anschutz, now Norse Energy Company, against the town of Dryden. So I think I have received the final reply brief today from Mr. West's office on behalf of Norse Energy. It is impassioned, see you soon, and impassioned. I didn't realize that oral briefs could be quite that, how shall we say, shrill, I guess is really the word. So the hearing for the oral arguments has not been set yet. We assume it will be in early February. I see nothing particularly new in the arguments except the tone. We remain confident that the court will continue to uphold our right to regulate land use. It's a battle I wish were over, but we're proud to be able to carry on. Setting that aside, there is a snowman contest in the town of Dryden. No snow at the moment, but we're assuming there will be before the end of the contest at the end of February. So anybody who would like to submit a picture of a snowman to the Recreation Department in Dryden, that would be fun.
Excellent.
Anything else I should... I mean, seriously, those are the two biggest things going on.
Well, thanks very much, Marianne. <Okay. laughs> Of equal importance, absolutely. Does anybody have any questions for Marianne? Frank.
Happy New Year, Marianne.
Thank you.
A week or so ago, Senator Schumer visited Greek Peak to try to work with them about helping to put them on firmer footing. And since the town really butts right up to Greek Peak, are you folks involved in any of the economic development aspects of that? And if not, should you be?
Interesting question. We are not directly involved. That's a Town of Virgil project.
Right.
I will say that the Greek Peak accountant is on our planning planning board, so we do hear news from them. But they have not approached us for help, and I do not know if that would be appropriate for us, but I will take it under advisement. It's certainly a major tourism destination in the area.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions for Marianne? Marianne, in the court case, the hearing is in February. Is it another hearing?
Hasn't been set yet, but we're assuming it will be early February.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for appointing Ms. Perlman. She's the best.
Great. Legislator privilege of the floor. Anyone? Nathan.
Yeah, well, today is Martin Luther King's birthday, and also the birthday of my dad, Larry Shinagawa.
And so I just wanted to share a quick memory about both. When I was 8 years old, or 8 or 9 years old, there was a book that had just come out called Eyes on the Prize. And it was a collection of stories and speeches from the civil rights movement. And my dad said, you know, that he wanted me to read it. And being the son of a college professor, and, you know, he didn't think anything of the fact I was nine, he thought I could read this 720-page book, which I ended up actually reading a good amount of. It was like, you know, a little kid, and I'm reading this, and at the same time, you know, there was PBS documentaries that came around that same time period, and I just really got caught up in the whole civil rights movement and the struggle for, you know, for civil rights and equality, and then now, you know, our struggle for diversity and inclusion. And it was something that that kind of awakened my political identity too as a young kid. And in fact, I actually, when I was about 12, I used to know the full "I Have a Dream" speech and a couple other Martin Luther King speeches. And I would go and I did them as part of like a talent show once. So, but you know, of course, yeah, it's a and the rest is history, right? And so I just wanted to share that because it's just whenever I think of Martin Luther King Day and his birthday, I think of my father too, and how both of them are so important to my life and who I am today.
Thank you, Nathan. Anyone else? Will, then Frank.
Yeah, as you may have heard, the State Assembly this afternoon passed the gun control measure that was brought forth by Governor Cuomo and passed last night by the Senate, making New York State arguably the strictest gun control state in the nation. Among other things, it would allow people that currently own semi-automatics, such as the Bushmaster, to keep them, but they would have to up to a year to register them with the police. It will, however, outlaw a broad array of military style weapons. It will restrict ammunition magazines to 7 bullets, down from the current 10. It'll create a more comprehensive database of people barred from owning guns, and it makes New York State the first state to require background checks to buy bullets. And it will also flag customers who are buying large quantities of ammo. So this has just been passed. It remains to be seen how it's going to play out in the state. And, of course, probably tomorrow we're going to be hearing proposals that are coming down at the federal level. I have to say I was a little discouraged to pick up today's paper and read that our new Congressman Reed is apparently taking a stance against gun control at the federal level. I hope that he can be persuaded that there are some sensible measures that can be taken that do not infringe on Second Amendment rights. So stay tuned, and I will be bringing forth, I'm still trying to gather some ideas that we can consider at the local level and maybe some resolution that we can pass urging further action. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Will. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to encourage you to read your phone bill. I received my new missile here a couple of weeks ago, and some of you will be treated to an increase in the universal fund charge. We're going to start being a little more active with regard to that because of Pat's and Paula's effort with broadband, but because of the opportunity for garnering some more funds for, we hope, the county. But just wanted to tip you off that you'll be contributing whether you want to or not. Thank you.
Actually, Frank, my husband showed me the phone bill online, and I couldn't. It's astonishing. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's pages and pages. I'm really happy he deals with that on a regular basis.
You must have a long, long distance phone bill.
Well,
because the USF is only usually just attributable to the long distance chargers.
Well, we have a couple of kids whose phones are on a bill. That's another story.
Why don't you share? You want to share the bill with the rest of us?
All right, sure. We'll do that. Carol.
Yeah, I'll just add to what Will said, that of our state representatives, Jim Seward and Tom O'Mara, voted against the gun control agreement at the state level today. I just also want to spend a minute recognizing a young man who took his life. It was mentioned, it was Sunday, on the front page of the New York Times, at least on the online version. A young man named Aaron Schwartz, 26 years old. And why would this 26-year-old be mentioned on the front page of the New York Times? Well, it turns out that this young man, was solely responsible for developing the protocol that allowed us to read articles, to download and read articles, the very first way that we did that, which was something called RSS, where you could sign up for an RSS feed and have articles from the New York Times or from journals you were interested in automatically come to you every day. He then went on to found several other internet-based kinds of services that involved providing information. He was a co-founder of one of the precursor of Reddit, which is, again, a service that allows people to post articles they find interesting. This young man was very, very, very passionate that information that is out there deserves to be available and free to the extent possible, and that as a society, we should be making that happen, that the existence of the Internet was something that could make that happen, and that rather than have to go to your local library, you could get stuff online, and the fact that our library now is able to provide online access to a lot of articles is in large part due to the efforts of this young man. Along the way, this young man decided that academic articles also ought to be available. And in fact, you can go to your local library and read current magazines and journals. But as they get to be older, the typical way that one goes and finds these articles is with a company called JSTOR, J-S-T-O-R, which charges hundreds, if not thousands of dollars for a subscription. And then if you want to download articles per article, they charge $25, $30 per article. And not everybody can afford to do that. If you're a student at a $50,000 a year institution, you can go to your library and do this. Well, this young man decided that this ought to be available, and we ought to be having a community conversation about it. Part of the reason I'm telling you about this is because in his memory, we should be having that community conversation. It's part of part of the reason we're trying to make broadband available to everybody. But one of the things that he did to drive home his point that things ought to be available is he went to a university library, and with a valid subscription and with a valid computer at a university that freely allows anybody to come onto their campus and download articles, he came and downloaded a good percentage of the JSTOR database and put it up online to make it available to anybody. And that was not okay with the university, and it was not okay with the company, this JSTOR, which is a nonprofit. So they brought charges. The university brought charges. JSTOR, after talking to this young man, said, "We understand what he's trying to do. We believe in this, and we're not going to press charges. We don't want the 4.8 million articles published for anybody. We need to be getting something for our efforts and for our servers, but we're not going to press charges." The university went ahead. It happened to be MIT. And the prosecutor that was brought in threw the book at this kid. It wasn't going for a few months in jail, wasn't going for 1 year in jail, wasn't going for 2 years in jail. They were trying to put this kid in jail for 35 years, even after the company that was wrong said, "We're dropping the charges."
And the upshot is that this young man took his life. He just couldn't face being that cooped up and not having access and the ability to fight for the things he believed in. So I just wanted to bring that conversation to the legislature. Obviously, I'm not advocating just stealing 4.8 million articles and making them available for everybody, but there ought to be some conversation about how do we as a society make information available, how do we make it so that somebody doesn't say, I own all of this, even though it was freely available with last month's journal, now I own the rights to charge you to read it. So just wanted to throw that out there and to remember Aaron Schwartz and to thank him for all the things that he did to make information available that we all use every day.
Thanks, Carol. I've got Jim, Leslin, and Nathan.
My question was for Frank. Frank, the tax that you talk about or the fee, is that only on landlines or is that on cell phones also?
It's on cell phones, and if you have subscribed through Time Warner for your phone service, it's on those lines too. So it is on cell phones and on landlines and on, yes, it's on all of them.
Leslin?
Thank you. Carol, thank you so much for sharing that story. I just want to, and Nathan, for recognizing the birthday of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I wanted to remind folks that in the spirit of Dr. King, that there are a series of community celebrations and events honoring his life and legacy. I mentioned it at our last meeting. This Thursday is Thursday the 17th is the Northside Southside Program of Lifelong annual Martin Luther King Jr. Luncheon at the Southside Community Center beginning at 11 o'clock. And on Saturday is the annual GIAC Martin Luther King Jr. Community Breakfast. Our guest speaker this year is Fee Nunn, who's an administrator in the Ithaca City School District and has been doing just amazing work advocating for youth in our community. Following that is the Monday Day On celebration. Monday is the official holiday. The 21st is the MLK Day celebration between BJM and GIAC. It's a luncheon. Starts at BJM, and we continue with workshops at GIAC. Included as part of that celebration is the hope to stream the inauguration of President Obama. So for those of us who will not be in Washington, D.C., this might be an opportunity to gather with good company and watch that event. So I just wanted to remind people of those events that are happening this weekend in honor of Dr. King.
Leslin, when is the Saturday event?
Saturday is 9. Breakfast is 9 to 11:30 at BJM. And there's always a program that goes along with the breakfast.
Are you going to the inauguration?
I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm. I was
there for the first one. I'm working on it for the second one.
Yeah, I understand that we got a message that the Congress, you know, Tom Reed and Richard mm-hmm. Hannum, I still have some tickets. So I'm going to be able to go. So maybe we'll see you there. I've got Nathan Nenduli.
I just wanted to add to Carol's comments that also he was a leader on the fight against SOPA and PIPA, too,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, which are, you know, laws that would have greatly limited the freedoms we have on the Internet.
Did I say that he was 14 years old when he developed the RSS, too?
It's incredible. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Dooley.
Yes, well, I came prepared to talk about Aaron Schwartz also. And yes, he was 14 when he came up with the concept of the RSS protocol. But I have a somewhat different spin as the story goes on. Where I work, all our journal articles are part of, they're kept in JSTOR. So JSTOR to me is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And JSTOR, along with many, many other individual journal publishers has been wanting to have things available free, especially research that's paid for by the government should be public property. But there's a difficulty with that in that there's a question of how these journals will ever get published if everything's free. So on some level, there has to be some cost to produce written articles that aren't full of errors and that are readable. The 4.8 million articles that Aaron Swartz had stolen by hacking into MIT computers using false name. When he met with JSTOR, they had a meeting of the minds, as you said, and he turned over everything he had back to them, and they did not press charges. And contrary to what you said, I believe, MIT did not press charges. They also understood what he was trying to do, and he did no harm in terms of JSTOR, so they were okay with the outcome. The charges were solely brought by a federal prosecutor who just could not let it go. And Mr. Swartz had made $1 million or so when Reddit was sold to Condé Nast. So he had money, but for 2 years he's been defending himself in court, and all that money was gone. And it had reached the point where his parents were about to mortgage their house to pay for his lawyers. And that may have had something to do with his killing himself. It's a horrible story. It's so sad. He had an amazing mind, an amazing ability to do things which I could read you about, but I can't summarize. And I'm glad you brought it up. I'm glad Nate knew about him, too. That was everything you said was right. And the Times gives a wrong flavor to the story, and I'm sorry about that. That happens in the Times from time to time.
Thank you, Julie.
One other thing about this is that in Aaron's memory, many, many, many researchers around the world are now creating PDF versions of their own work and posting them and making them freely available. This whole question of how and at what cost things ought to be available, you know, don't get me started. If we weren't spending so much more money fighting wars abroad, we would have plenty of money to make journals that have peer-reviewed, vetted articles in many, many fields available. And I think that's what we ought to be doing.
Mike.
I think one of my favorite assignments on the legislature is I liaison to the Tompkins County Library Board of Trustees. And we have there a wonderful board of trustees. Tonight we're going to add a couple new members, which will bring them up to full complement. They're bright people. They work hard. They have great ideas. We have probably one of the finest municipal libraries in the region. It's also the main library for the whole Finger Lakes library system. When we did our budget process this year, we talked about the fact that the library, along with some other entities that we sponsor, TCAT and TCAD, both are all having structural deficit problems. So we need to keep our library in mind, and we have to think this year about how we can address that long-term structural problem. The library has worked with the county over the last few years. It's actually reduced staff. It has a very good working relationship and very excellent bargaining units. Its employees understand the problems and have worked cooperatively to make sure we can continue to have great services. We have lots of people who line up at the doors in the morning to use computers and get into the library services. It's a real jewel that our full county has. And I just want to bring it up today to say, let's keep the library in mind. We worked a little bit toward that structural deficit in this year's budget, but we really need to think about how we can solve this problem for the long term.
Thank you, Mike. Very true. Anyone else? Kathy.
I just want to remind everybody, there was an announcement last week from Cornell Cooperative Extension. Remember, on the 17th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at Cornell Cooperative Extension, you can pick up a free radon testing kit. In Fall Creek, sometimes there are issues with that, and I know that many neighbors aren't sure whether they have radon problems or not. Getting a free radon testing kit is a great way to find out. January 17th at Cornell Cooperative Extension, which is on Willow Ave. Just want to tell people, and if you have doubts, give them a call there. But it's free.
Thank you, Kathy. Anyone else? All right. Well, now's the part of the meeting where I will appoint committees for 2013. I have a few remarks to lead into that. There are many familiar cycles in county government: monthly meetings, quarterly reports, annual budgets. As we speak tonight, we are entering the final year of another cycle, our four-year legislative terms. So it seems a good time to look back as well as forward. Since we started this legislative term in January 2010, the county clerk's office has naturalized 370 applicants for citizenship, coming from more than 30 counties in the countries of the world. Our Emergency Response Center has answered 121,192 calls and dispatched a total of 174,355 incidents to agencies. At the Tompkins County Airport, some 700,000 passengers came and went. These were the busiest 3 years in the airport's history. Our Complete Count Census Committee helped the federal government count 101,564 Tompkins County residents, going over the 100,000 mark for the first time ever. Using those new numbers, an independent commission redrew our legislative districts, also for the first time ever. We managed to find balanced budget solutions during the most challenging fiscal times in our memory, in part because we closed our certified home health agency. We've taken important steps to stabilize the financing for Tompkins County Area Development and TCAT. We're now living with a tax cap, property tax cap, but we've yet to see meaningful mandate relief. Perhaps the biggest surprise of the last 3 years is that we're not living with hydrofracking, at least not yet. On a more personal level, more of us get movie tickets with senior discounts, and Leslin now puts Indira on Dave's school bus every day. Joe has created 571 PowerPoint presentations, even though...
Wait, you counted?
572, even though he's taken 4 days off of work since January 2010. We are the same 15 legislators who were sworn in three years ago with no turnover during this term. We know each other pretty well by now. Looking back, there have been some difficult times and some tough decisions since 2010, but it's also been a productive time. We have one more year. What do we want to do with that time? What mark do we want to make? Clearly, we would like to make a mark on unemployment and its related problem, income inequality. Diversity and social justice are part of this persistent problem in which national and state policies have sway over much of what happens here. In November 2012, the unemployment rate in Tompkins County was 5.4%, or about 3,100 unemployed residents. Those numbers have been fairly stagnant for the last 3 years. Although the rate is well below today's statewide number of 7.9%, it's much higher than our typical unemployment rate and is simply not acceptable. A key measure of income insecurity, the number of households here receiving food stamps has gone from 4,254 in January 2010 to more than 5,000 last October, a 19% increase. Again, these numbers are not acceptable. In Tompkins County, we tend to roll up our sleeves and ask, what can we do? How can county government help create jobs? We have amazing assets in our county, including creative and entrepreneurial folks in the public and private sectors, our higher education community, and especially TCAD. It's time to give economic development, including workforce development, more of our attention and time as a legislature. Therefore, I'm appointing an economic development committee as a standing committee this year. The group should work closely with TCAD, Workforce Development, the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, and all our tourism partners, and the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council. In addition, I would like TC3 to report to the Economic Development Committee to work more closely with us concerning their employment-related programs. I look forward to seeing innovative partnerships and ideas coming from this group. We also want to make a mark on climate change, where, unfortunately, the pace of change seems to be accelerating. There's no more important legacy we will leave our children and grandchildren than a safer world. Unfortunately, the task is daunting. But fortunately, we have no shortage of ideas to explore that we could implement right here in Tompkins County. Therefore, I'm changing the focus of PDEQ and renaming it Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality. With more time and more focused responsibilities, this will give sustainability an even higher priority than it's had in the past. Our planning staff has done a remarkable job in creating the Cleaner, Greener Southern Tier Plan, identifying 18 goals and more than 65 action items for the short and long term. This plan will provide a basis for the committee's work. I've asked Ed Marks to give the full legislature an overview of the Cleaner, Greener Plan at one of our meetings in the near future. Beyond all this, we will rely on the PEEQ committee, PEEQ committee, together with HHS to keep us abreast of developments with respect to hydrofracking in New York. Our constituents expect us to continue our advocacy on this critical issue. With that explanation of the committee changes, let me go through the committee appointments. For economic development, I've asked Will Burbank to be the chair, with Mike Lane as vice chair, and the committee filled out with Jim Dennis, Carol Chalk, and Frank Proto. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality, Carol Chalk will be the chair. Pam McAsee is the vice chair, and the other members are Will Burbank, Julie Kiefer, and Pat Pryor. Facilities and Infrastructure, Peter Stein will be the chair, with Julie Kiefer vice chair, Carol Chalk, Pam McAsee, and Dave McKenna being the other five members, the full five members. With Carol moving over to PEEQ, I've asked Peter to lead F&I. Long interested in highway projects especially, Peter will bring his inquisitive style and personal initiative to this important area of county government. F&I should continue with a number of ongoing projects. One emerging issue is the strategic planning effort by the Air Services Board. For public safety, I've asked Brian Robison to be chair, with Peter Stein vice chair, Jim Dennis, Leslie McBean Claiborne, and Dave McKenna as the other members. Continuing with musical chairs, Brian Robison will take over as chair of public safety this year. With his law enforcement background and his service as the committee's vice chair, Brian is well poised for this slot. Issues this year will include changes to the public safety building, hiring a 911 center manager, and continued exploration of alternative models for providing law enforcement in Tompkins County. I would also like public safety to examine the issue of gun violence. Beyond our gun buyback day, what else can we do to make our community safer? Budget, capital, and personnel will be chaired again by Jim Dennis, with Nathan Shinagawa as vice chair, Brian Robison, Kathy Lucerera, and Leslie McBean Claiborne on the committee. Jim Dennis has done a great job in leading our budget deliberations, and I'm fully expecting him to bring in another unanimous vote in 2013. I'm pleased that Les will be on budget this year so we can see an even greater focus on WDIC. Government Operations, Pat Pryor will chair, with Mike Lane as vice chair, Julie Kiefer, Pam McAsee, and Peter Stein as the rest of the committee. Pat Pryor has done such a great job with the Broadband Committee that I was pleased she felt she has time to chair GO. A number of emerging issues will come to the committee this year, including evaluating our policies on contracts with respect to livable wages, diversity, and other issues. Health and Human Services, Frank Proto will chair again. Kathy Luz Herrera will be vice chair. Will Burbank, Nathan Shinagawa, and Pam McAsee will be the rest of the committee. I think HHS is Frank Proto's middle name. Aside from the usual vigilance about state and federal cuts, HHS should, together with the Public Safety Committee, also examine gun safety from a broad perspective. How can we improve access to mental health care? How can we work with the schools, perhaps the medical community, or other partners to foster a closer-knit community that has the chance to reduce violence? Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne will chair. with Kathy Luz Herrera, Nathan Shinagawa, and Pat Pryor being additional representatives from the legislature. Working closely with Deputy County Administrator Paula Younger, Leslin will continue the vital work of WDIC. We look forward to implementing recommendations from the climate survey and bringing the county's diversity plan in final form to every county department. There are a couple of special committees in addition. Broadband with Pat Pryor as chair and Dave McKenna as vice chair and many community members as in the past years. Just before coming to here tonight, I checked the news. Still no announcement on the governor's $25 million grant for broadband access. We expect to hear any day now. The committee's work this year will depend largely on whether our local application is successful. Capital Plan Review Committee, Mike Lane, chair. I will be vice chair. And Dooley Kiefer and Frank Proto will be the other two members. Looking back on our last 3 years, I'm very pleased with the journey this committee has taken us on. We came into office in January 2010 with strident demands for more space for the court system in this building and with no plan on how to make that happen. The Capital Plan Review Committee took on the complicated decisions about COFA relocation, a new home for the legislature, moving the old library programs out of that building to more appropriate and functional spaces, and whether a center of government makes sense for us. The committee also led this body in revising our 20-year capital program. Finally, I'm happy to tell you, COFA moved today into their beautiful new space in the Human Services Annex. The legislature will relocate this year as well to the historic and elegant old courthouse. Promised, right, Norrell? Okay, great. Established as a temporary special committee 3 years ago, CPR's work is almost done. What remains is to make a decision on the future home of the Community Justice Center and what we want to do with the old library site. My hope is that CPR can take the first half of 2013 and bring recommendations on these issues to the full legislature and then retire. Mike Lane will lead us in that work once again. Charter Review Committee. Mike Lane will chair that as well, with Dooley Kiefer as vice chair and the other committee members, Kathy Luz Herrera, Dave McKenna, and Peter Stein. Once the CPR committee concludes its work, this body will have the time to take on another temporary job, the task of reviewing our county charter as we do every 10 years. Using the experience of several who did this the last time around, the Charter Review Committee will be led by Mike Lane. Among the issues they should consider are revised rules for electing legislative leadership with a 14-member body. You have in your folders the assignments and responsibilities list. If there are any suggestions or questions, it's possible to adjust those assignments during the year, you know, which department, if there's something that should report to a different committee. If you want to suggest a change, please talk to Joe and the appropriate department heads and committee chairs. These committee assignments will take effect as of February 1st, so the January meetings and responsibilities will continue as they were in 2012 for a couple more weeks. And after our meeting adjourns tonight, please stay around to work on the meeting schedule for the year. I think some of you are working on that before the meeting tonight, so that's good. Kathy's placed a draft calendar in your red folders as some suggestions to start with. Finally, I want to thank you for your confidence and your support for my role as chair of this body. I deeply appreciate the opportunity to serve another year. You were all very generous with your time in meeting with Mike and me about our direction for 2013. My gratitude especially goes to Mike for his partnership in developing this committee structure and assignments. I look forward to Mike's wise counsel throughout the year. We have many challenges ahead of us in 2013 as we complete this legislative cycle. On behalf of our 101,000 constituents, let us work together hard, and as Peter says, always seek to learn something. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? All right. County Administrator Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Martha. I don't have much tonight. We do have a couple of executive session items after this. And I think I have two items. Jonathan, I believe, has one. I want to compliment you on your speech. I thought it was really good. but a couple of PowerPoint slides really would have blistered. So
next year. Time.
Just a couple of announcements. Carol, I don't know if you were going to talk about the public meeting on Pine Tree Road coming up. It's coming up on the 24th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Lutheran over in Hunts Lane. We'll be talking about the Pine Tree Road project at that time with neighbors. The only other announcement, I think you already all know this, the ribbon-cutting grand opening for the COFA building will be the next day, the 25th. I believe it's at 11 o'clock. Is that correct, Marcia?
Yes.
Martha's right. Moving day was today. I was over there. I don't know if you went. Lots of smiles and a lot of appreciation for the facility staff that helped with that move, who really did a great job getting the transition underway very quickly. I think they took half the time that they expected and really made it an easy transition from one building to the other. In talking to some of the staff there, I may have told some of you already, they already have had some walk-ins who happened to see the sign going up and as soon as there were lights on came in to talk to us about services. So it's having the right effect. I think other than my executive session items, that's it for my report tonight.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions? Will.
Joe, do we have a time on that ribbon cutting? That's Friday the 25th?
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock. Right. It's the ribbon cutting for the COFA, the Human Services Annex building.
All right. Anyone else? Thanks very much, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
A couple things. First, I want to request a brief executive session. I hope will be a brief executive session to update the board on litigation. I also wanted to comment on an article that was in the Ithaca Journal last week concerning the case, which people know pretty much as the Chris Miller case against the city of Ithaca. As you all probably know, Mr. Miller is a police officer at the city who claims he was discriminated against because he's a white male. What most of you may not know or recall is that the original lawsuit by Mr. Miller was against both the city and the county district attorney's office. Back in 2010, both the city and the county made motions to dismiss. The county's motion was granted in full, and the city's motion was granted only in part. Which brings me back to this article that was in the paper last week. The gist of the article was that the city had spent so far about $200,000 in attorney's fees. But interestingly, that only covered the part which wasn't covered by their insurance. They also pay for the insurance to cover the litigation costs. And the article ended by saying that there was a sample bill available online at the Ithaca Journal from one of the council. So I looked up the bill on the Ithaca Journal, and it was the bill from the largest law firm that's representing them, and it includes both what was charged to the city as well as what wasn't charged by insurance. The bill is 92 pages. And the bill is for $640,767.50. The entire budget for the Tompkins County Attorney's Office for 2013 is $406,399. So you can draw whatever conclusion you want from that. I just found it interesting.
Just about to say what you're trying to say, John.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything.
It's not budget time yet.
Any questions for Jonathan? Peter.
I listened carefully, Jonathan. I couldn't make head or tail out of this. If it's $600,000, how come it only cost them $200,000? Oh, that's the part. There was $400,000 that was covered by insurance or what?
Yeah, presumably. I mean, it was hard. I mean, that was the bill that was online. And what the article said is that the $200,000 was the part that wasn't covered by the insurance. So I'm, you know, that's as much as I know about it.
And the other thing is, what did the county have to do with it? How was the county part of this?
Peter, please use your mic.
Yeah, sure.
I asked Jonathan how the county got to be part of the lawsuit.
The original lawsuit had named both the county district attorney's office, and Gwen Wilkinson. So we get to be part of it because they sue us. But the essential claim against the county was that at some point the district attorney's office had determined that because of various issues, Mr. Miller would not be a credible witness and couldn't be used in criminal prosecutions. And that was perhaps a factor in their treatment of Mr. Miller, or maybe a result of their treatment in Mr. Miller. I'm not exactly sure what his theory is, but that was because the description in the complaint wasn't very thorough. But the premise of the county was the determination by the district attorney's office that they would not use Mr. Miller as a witness in criminal cases. And, in fact, they actually dismissed some cases because of that.
Just my conclusion is, once again, that the law is a mysterious and beautiful thing.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan. David Squires, Finance Director.
Well, I can't. There's a challenge here about bringing in saving money. You know, in the last couple of weeks, I've probably taken in $400,000 doing my job to offset the cost of the finance department. As you recall, we started off, the last Friday was a busy day for us because there was the final day to pay before properties are exposed to tax foreclosure. We started off with 110 properties, residential and farm properties. And as of the end of Friday, we collected on about 60% of that, of those 110. We still have too many, but we felt pretty good about the response. We did enter into about a half dozen installment agreements for properties, and we'll continue to next phase is really the investigative phase, where those people who didn't respond, we will be knocking on their door to find out why they didn't respond and what we can do to perhaps get them to pay. At the last meeting, I reported about sales tax that we expected to meet our budget estimate, but we were concerned because there was a big disparity in last year. The final payment we received by the state was about $500,000 higher than it normally was. So we were expecting the last payment to be less. And we figured the range was probably come in about $300,000 less than last year. Fortunately, it came in about $200,000 less than last year. So we should end up about $200,000 above budget in sales tax, where our low estimate was we were going to be exactly on budget. And we weren't optimistic we were going to be much above that. But so that was good news. And that's my report.
We like the good news. Peter.
There was a report in today's Ithaca Journal that says there was a disturbing decline in the rate of increase of sales tax. Are you disturbed by that? Or?
Well, you see, what happens is the final month of a quarter, they make adjustments that you really can't understand some of the adjustments, why they occur. A lot of times it has to do with you were credited with income that you weren't entitled to, and they find out about it. So I think that this month, the last payment in December was very volatile for most municipalities. We anticipated it. I think the one that was really surprised, Chemung County was really surprised because theirs was way down, and they were boasting about all the revenue they were taking in from the fracking activity in Pennsylvania. And suddenly the bottom dropped out of them, and they're having a little surprise. But you never know. I mean, you really can't predict what's going to happen. You just hold your breath at the end of a quarter.
Any other questions for David? Thanks very much, David. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right, I will read the consent agenda. If you have anything to pull off, just give a shout. Resolution A, ID 39.
Off.
Okay, Resolution B.
Off.
All right. Resolution C, ID 3922, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Barton & LaJudas, P.C. for design services, Pine Tree Road bike and pedestrian paths, PIN 3950.43, Town of Ithaca, and a number of appointments. To the Public Information Advisory Board, C.J. Delvecchio. To the Human Rights Commission, Josephine Karsich. Mental Health Subcommittee, Leslie Ann Connors. Office for the Aging Advisory Committee, Peggy Merrill. Nancy Zook to the Family Court Advisory Council. To the Library Board of Trustees, Kenneth McLean and Molly Salke. And Derek Evanson to the Environmental Management Council. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Kathy Luce moves and Carol seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Those are unanimous. I would like to ask Mike Lane to move up the capital plan review report so that Arel and Graham can have a little bit left of their evening.
Happy to do that. We had a special meeting of the capital plan review committee just prior to this legislature meeting in which we reviewed the bids that came in for the relocation of the legislature and the renovation of the old courthouse. The base bids are within budget. The question is whether we are going to be able to do some or all of the ad alternates. Tonight I'm going to be moving the revised resolution that was on your desk. And it is awarding bids for McPherson Builders, the Climate Control Technologies, and Richardson Brothers Electrical. The revision is it no longer has approval of the bid for the plumbing contract because after review by Holt Architects and Arel Lamaro, our engineer, it was felt that if we did that work in-house, and it's not awfully complicated, that we could probably save about $21,000 and that our own staff could probably do it for about $7,000 as opposed to $28,000. That might, depending on what kinds of changes might occur in the renovations and how our contingency is affected, it might allow us to do some of those additional things like the paintwork within the interior, the small bathroom renovation, and some other things. There's probably not enough money there to do the renovation of the conference room in the basement unless this legislature wanted to add money to the project. But we don't have to decide about the ad alternates at this point. We can wait until some of the deconstruction happens and see what electrical changes or plumbing changes might be required that we didn't anticipate, and see what it looks like the contingency might be affected, or whether or not the contingency might be affected, before we have to make decisions about those ad alternates. So when I finish the report, I'll be moving that one resolution. I'll mention that the other thing that will happen is tomorrow we'll have our regular meeting, and at that we will be discussing the schedule of the various projects that we have to complete. Chair Robertson has tasked us with trying to bring the Capital Plan Review Committee to a close this year, and that will include taking a look at possible other space for the day reporting system, maybe in the Human Services Building. Closeout of the Center for Government Study, and one more thing I can't think of right now, but we'll be looking at a schedule to be able to do that. So that's pretty much my report, and if there's questions, or I can just move the resolution.
I think the other thing was the decision on the old library site, even if we,
yes.
we can't make it happen.
Yes, thank
just
you.
A policy choice about what to do. Kathy?
Oh, I have a comment. I'm really proud that we're walking the talk. If the public and my colleagues will note the contractors on this, two of them are located here in Tompkins County, and the third is definitely in our region. This is great. We're employing local workers. We're helping local contractors. This is a great way, in my opinion, to build the local economy. And, of course, it's a point of pride that the electrical contractor is our own Richardson Brothers Electrical Contractors. Yay! Thank you.
I'd second that.
Are there any other questions for Mike?
I would therefore move Resolution D, the revised version, award of bid, Tompkins County Legislature Relocation Project.
Seconded by Dooley. Questions, conversations? Brian.
Yes. I think it's great that we're using some in-house labor, I take it, mostly.
For the plumbing.
For some of this. I'm curious as to what, now we awarded an initial bid specifically to Richardson Brothers, and the revised one actually is higher than the initial one by $8,300, and I'm just curious as to what happened in the interim.
Arell, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, the original or the initial resolution that was handed out last week did not include the ad alternate. It's number 7, and the revised resolution indicates we're including the addition of the first floor acoustical ceiling. When we were out to bid back in December of last year, several of the general work contractors and the electrical contractors expressed concern in having to do ceiling work in the planning department's office on the first floor. A lot of electrical conduit wiring for all the AV cameras, microphones, network systems have to be run on the in the first floor planning ceiling. Those of you that have been in that that space, that ceiling is probably a 25-year-old spline ceiling, concealed spline ceiling. It's not like your typical drop ceiling 2x4. It's very difficult to get into it, and then once you do open it up, the contractors expressed concern that they may not be able to put it back together. Plus, also, it would take a lot more time to run cabling and conduit and piping in this concealed ceiling versus putting in a new ceiling. So we thought in the interest of expediting the project, reducing potential unforeseen conditions that would eat into our contingency, to approve this alternate 7, total of 15,000. I think 8,000 was for the general work contractor, and or maybe it's vice versa, 7,000 or so for the general work and 8,000 for the electrical contractor. At this point, we felt it was necessary to approve it now because it's something that would increase in cost if we were to delay approval of this alternate. The other alternates are very specific in scope. It's either painting, replacing bathroom fixtures. I think there's a wooden railing around the legislature desks and refurbishing of the chandeliers in the space. Very specific in scope and would not impact the project schedule that we could do at any point between now and May of this year.
Okay. Well, that's true except for the ad alternate about the basement conference
room. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, the basement one, the committee that met earlier this afternoon, that we would not be able to approve, even if we were to use up all of the contingency funding, would exceed what we would have available at this point to do, even if we didn't touch the contingency funding.
But you also said in the committee meeting that that's a decision that we would really want to make now,
exactly,
at the beginning of the project if,
yes,
we wanted to add money to do that. But it's because that one, it's relevant that we have it in the full scope.
Yes.
May I finish,
yeah,
just for a second? I'm sorry, that was part A. Not to sound negative, because I don't want to be negative. I also see where there's an $18,000 savings between the two in the general contract work. And just curious how we did that.
Oh, okay. Yes. In our discussions with the apparent low, actually it was the second apparent low bidder, the original low bidder had to withdraw their bid. They were a third of the bid of everyone else. They were at about $117,000. The other low bidders in the general work are about $300,000-some. So anyway, when Holt was working to qualify them, they indicated that they had made several errors in their bid, so they withdrew their bid. McPherson was the next lowest bidder. In reviewing their bid and getting a breakdown, part of their bid, they indicated that there were some potential reductions, especially in your legislator desks, and so they reduced their bid by $25,000. And so that's reflected in the 298. I think originally it was $316,611. The 298 reflects the 25,000 reduction, as well as including the, I think it was 7,000 some for alternate number seven.
So we're not getting desks?
Oh, no, you are getting desks.
Oh, okay.
No. They had approached other millwork companies, and another one that they approached could give us better quality at a lower cost.
I think we have a lot of hands up. Pam, did you have your hand up, or Dooley? Okay. Pat?
Just one more quick check to make sure we're still on track to include the push button opening for the door.
Yes, the exterior door always has had paddle operators. I mean, in the project, it wasn't anything that we added last minute. So, yes, that's included in the base bid project that you're approving
today.
Thank
you. Okay, Frank, Carol, Peter.
Thanks, Martha. Aurel, first, nice to see you.
Yes, good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. I need to hear you say it one more time. The only add-on that's time-sensitive is the work in the basement for the proposed conference room. The other add-ons can be done almost any time if we opt to do them during the construction process. I mean, obviously the painting would be done last.
Right.
But the other items, we don't have to stage them at certain critical points.
Except for the ceiling, which is included in this resolution,
but
number seven.
That's for the planning department.
Correct. Aside from those alternates, there were a total of seven alternates. This resolution is approving alternate seven and the base bids. So the alternates one through six, of those six, the only one that is time sensitive is alternate number one, which we currently don't have the funding for, and the committee, Capital Plan Review Committee, did not at least approve including alternate number one at this point.
Can you mention the cost?
Excuse me?
Can you mention the cost?
It's $93,000.
Are you doing billable hours like Jonathan did to come up with that $400,000 versus the $600,000, or David did to come up with the extra $200,000 in sales tax?
Not yet, but I can.
Aurel, the spreadsheet says 83. Is that...
But if you go down below this, there's a $10,000 for furnishing.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So that's 93.
Okay. Sorry. Carol.
I mean, I would urge us to go ahead and do this. I think our staff and the Holt architects have done an incredible job working with us to come in including contingency and a decent contingency right at just under the budget that we had set. I'd urge us to do this. I was prepared to go ahead and put some of the features that we had talked about that we've had to drop or keep on the list as add alternates. One of them being we're building a beautiful new handicapped accessible toilet, but that's only one. So there's a break room already there with a toilet that we could be rehabbing and we're not. So I hope at some point we get to go ahead and do that for only $9,000. We had removed the beautiful wood at the desk. We guess that couldn't fit in the design. So the architects had come up with this feature of these pretty wood railings that would sit sort of out in the room in a circle kind of extending behind our desks. and that would be at a cost of about $13,000. Painting, it's always nice if you're moving into a new space. It's a good time rather before everybody gets settled in to do the painting for $22,000. So I would have been prepared to go ahead with some of those and would be now if there were other sentiment. The committee did not choose to move that forward. But for, 46,000, we could do those three things. If
yeah,
there was any inclination.
That would require bringing money from somewhere else, I suppose the contingent fund, but that's not current. We would have to vote to add that somewhere else.
So I do hope that there'll be money as we move forward in the contingent fund that we can agree that we would move some of these things forward should we not need it for the basics.
That is our hope, yes.
Peter?
Pat.
Okay, anyone else? Mike.
I just wanted to say on the schedule so folks know how this is going forward, we hope to have construction starting sometime in February.
Yes.
And we hope to be able to occupy sometime in June.
Great. Very excited. Anybody else? Ready to vote? All in favor of the revised resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Graham Gillespie from Holt, thank you so much. We look forward to as beautiful a project as the COFA building. And Aurel, thank you. It's always great to give you more work to do.
Yeah, actually, that phone call, I'm sorry for the interruption earlier, remember, it rang. It was Lisa Holmes just leaving her new building, and she was looking how to lock the back door for Sustainability Center. So it has a little hex key that had fallen out of the door, so I told her where it might be, and she found it on the carpet and locked the door. So. Otherwise, she'd still be there.
That's great. I think it's so pretty she doesn't want to leave and go home. Is that right? One other item, the chairs, Mike. Do we have some people who haven't voted on the chairs? Is that right?
Yeah, if you haven't voted on the chairs, go ahead. We're still working on a final solution there.
They're in in Michelle's room in the other
room. Have you and Martha voted on the same chair?
I don't know. I can't remember. Kathy could probably tell you.
I don't know.
If so, then I'll follow my fearless leaders and vote whatever they vote.
Craig.
Mike, I neglected to ask this before, but when we started this project, we had not finished the redistricting item. Did we save any money because there only may be 14 legislators the next time around as opposed to 15?
No, but we wanted David to have a chair.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh.
All right, Dooley.
I wondered if, Mike, if you could tell us whether we have the consultants looking at the Human Services building for possible location for the Justice Center?
That's something that we should be hearing more about tomorrow at our meeting. But yes, we've asked LaBella to kind of pull those out and take a new look at it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee, before Graham leaves, Graham, wait.
Nice try.
I want to go back to a comment under my committee report regarding the new digs for COFA and put a bid in to remind the board that some of us did want to call that the COFA cabana. But the I remember when we had a space needs committee a number of years ago, and some of you will remember that. One of the primary items, you'll remember that, Martha, you were on that committee, along with Dooley and Kathy. One of the primary responsibilities was to find a spot for COFA. And, Aurel, so I think a lot of us have come through a lot of tough times, and the place is spectacular. It really looks It really looks wonderful, and everybody's announced it already, but I hope you'll bring your entire staff with Cindy and everybody else that was so helpful in getting that space done. Lisa is, even though she can't find the key, Lisa is having a ball, and her staff is very appreciative. So thanks, and thanks to your staff.
Thank you very much, Mike. Yeah, hope to see everybody at the ribbon cutting.
Well, the 25th at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Committee report. Our committee met just before the board meeting. We had two resolutions and an action item regarding advisory board appointments. Dooley asked that both the resolutions be pulled off for, we'll ask her why that is. I just wanted to let you know that the committee, as Martha proposed, will pretty much remain intact. Pam will be a new member. I hope you'll accept that. The committee, to get our oar in early, the continuing members would like to keep the meeting time the same on Tuesday, the second Tuesday of the month at 3:30. In addition to that, Frank Krupa, you've been interested, I'm sure, in what the status of the flu has been in our county. We have had a number of cases. Frank was on the news this morning. The email that he sent me indicates that they've canvassed the local pharmacies, and most still have vaccine. Vaccine is not a problem at this point. There's plenty of vaccine. We needed to operate under the governor's executive order that permits pharmacies to give and administer vaccine to children. They were not permitted to do that. They are now. Frank is meeting with the representatives from Cornell and the Cuba Medical Center tomorrow to map out a strategy, because the students are about to return, and that's always a concern, because they've been places where they can bring a lot of hurt into the community without knowing it. So in addition to that, we'll be setting up a schedule of meetings, and Martha has given us some interesting challenges. One of them certainly is working with the school district. Some of you may have read the article about the unfortunate designation on the Caroline Elementary School, and I've had a meeting already with the principal, and we'll meet again with him regarding the superintendent's concerns. So stay tuned. We have a busy year. Our comments through the Board of Health regarding the fracking issue. Martha did a phenomenal job in getting that letter off. Thank you. And all of our comments that were submitted via the Water Resources Council, I don't want to steal anybody else's thunder, but I understand the Planning Department and the EMC have all been sent off to Albany. The Board of Health endorsed the Water Resources Council's comments on fracking and on the new proposed addition to the regs. I won't go through all that. Marcia has done a really great job in getting that news article out. But I know the Health Committee will be very much involved in this next year, depending on what direction the governor takes at all on issues like that. Beyond that, we'll be hopefully meeting in, may I have that minute, Kath? Thank you. The League of Women Voters, this is an announcement that the League is having a public meeting entitled Healthcare, What's Up in Albany. It's January 28th from 7 to 8:30 at the library. And our Nate is on the panel along with Linda Smith and Sarah Jane Blake. It'll be a discussion on New York State Medicaid redesign and Affordable Health Care Act. Nathan has all the answers, and so a bunch of us are going to be there taking copious notes.
Nate,
thanks for reminding me, Kathy. Thank you.
And you have two resolutions.
Resolution A, budget adjustment, youth services, and I move it.
Is there a second? Second by Pat.
These were both passed unanimously, by the way, at the committee meeting just prior to this meeting.
Dooley?
I asked them both to be taken off because I wanted to make sure that the explanation below the resolution is included in the minutes, and I was advised that the only way to be sure of that is to take them off of consent. So that's what I'm asking.
Okay.
With that request.
That
okay,
Kath? Okay. Thanks, Dooley.
Ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution A, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That's unanimous.
Resolution B, number 3930, Budget Adjustment Office of National Drug Control and Policy Mentoring Grant, Youth Services Department. And I so move.
Second by Kathy Luz.
Same request.
All set? Okay, great. Any questions? All in favor of the resolution B, please raise your hand. That's unanimous.
Martha, can I ask a procedural question? Dooley's request about including the explanation, can we just assume that we would normally do that in the minutes when we have an explanation on the resolution? Can we do that as a matter of course?
Kathy, is that okay? Okay.
Yeah, why don't we just do that so we don't have to go through this at every meeting?
All right.
That's a good idea.
A good change. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
The committee met on February 4th. We passed the resolution with the consent agenda. Those are for additional design services, the plans for Pine Tree Road. Staff went into some explanation, but we felt that it deserved a larger look by the community that was going to take longer than we had during a meeting and that should happen in an evening. So as Joe let you know, on January 24th, we will be having staff present the various alternatives. There's a very clear alternative, preferred alternative by our staff that you'll be hearing more about. We are seeking construction bids for the Hanshaw Road project. Is there a reason that did not come to us here? Did that just need to come to the committee?
I think so.
So, okay. One of the most important things that we did doesn't come to the whole body, but really speaks to what our future projects will be. I alluded to it in the upcoming announcement about the meeting, but we had a very good conversation about what federal aid bridge and highway projects are in the pipeline, how do they get there, what ought they to be, and how closely do we like our staff to follow the guidelines that the committee sets. So that was a good discussion. And we also had what I would consider merely scratching the surface of a discussion about project labor agreements. We had two visitors from the Electrical Workers Union, Mike Tolarski and Stacy Black. My handwriting is so terrible. Is it Black or Buell?
Black.
At the end of which, I'm not sure that I even yet understand what a project labor agreement is, in spite of Jonathan's best attempts. And so I think we have a lot more work to do. I think one of the big questions is whether it makes sense to use them for projects as small as what we usually do. There seems to be more experience out there with projects of over the $25 million mark. including projects like AES Milliken Station. There was a new scrubber project where they use them. Cornell has had some, the ILR school, and right now they're using one for their Stocking Hall rebuild project. So we would have to figure out some kind of threshold advantages, and again, this is just in a nutshell what we spent a lot of time on and without fully understanding, but the essence seems to be that the workers like them because all of the labor conditions are negotiated at once across the various unions and non-union workers. All of the working conditions, the hours per day, the overtime conditions, the jurisdictional dispute, how that will be handled, are all set at once. So the unions like it because they know what they're getting into. There were mixed reviews. I had heard about this originally from some very conservative legislators in Glens Falls and Western New York at the NYSAC conference. And I heard about it at the same time from both the management side and the union side. But some of the information out there seems to indicate that the workers like to see these more than the management. I think we sort of still have to do more research as to whether that is true. Karen then distributed, and it might make sense to distribute to everybody, a link to some very interesting papers that have come out of the ILR school about experience with these listings of what kinds of projects. I know Westchester County has made great use, including of something called their old jail renovation project, which seemed to not be actually a jail, which was interesting, and some projects that seemed to be not as large as the ones that the examples that were brought to us. So that will be an interesting discussion into the future as well. That's basically what we did.
Okay, thank you very much, Carol. Kathy.
Thanks. I just wanted to say to Carol, having not only studied project labor agreements, but also seen efforts to put them together, that they're often viewed in a positive way by the contractors as well, for some of the same reasons you mentioned. You can do all the negotiating at once. It's set out ahead of time, so everybody knows what to expect. And there are also opportunities for the contractors to talk with the different working units about ways to, as we call it, value engineer. In other words, come up with a way to save money for the contractor. These are valuable agreements, and they're in vogue because people of all political stripes are coming to understand that in this economy, it's important for us to figure out ways to not have to spend so much time negotiating, to come to some agreements, and then to get to work. I just want to say I'm thrilled that F&I is investigating this. I think that across the country we're seeing that it's not just on the big projects that these are being used, that on small projects it can actually represent a considerable savings because, after all, the time with consultants, the time spent figuring out the various price points for things can be decided in a contract. So I hope and very pleased that it's being investigated, but I hope y'all will do it with an open mind. I know that there's folks at the Building Trades Council right now that are working with the city and the county to set up a day or even evening meeting where anybody who wants to be educated about this, and I'm going to go too if it's at a time when I can attend, can go and engage in a fruitful discussion. It won't just be a one-way conversation. And I think this is the key of what makes project labor agreements so good, is that it comes about through a conversation between the folks that are trying to get a good deal on the work and get it done on time and under budget, and between the workers who want the work and who want to find a way to establish a better economic situation in their community. So all props to y'all for doing that, and I also have some hope that we'll be using project labor agreements and other big projects coming up. A water treatment plant comes to mind. The TCAT bus garage extension comes to mind. There are a number of places where we can utilize these, and it's only to our good that we look into these, as I say, with an open mind. So thanks for doing that.
I should say, in all fairness, Jonathan is sitting there frowning. So in all fairness to his research, I should say that there are the disadvantages that we talked about include some significant upfront costs, both for our legal staff, and you have to hire a consultant to do a feasibility study establishing the benefits for that particular project. So there are some upfront costs, which is one of the reasons that they tend to be used on larger projects. You are open to some legal challenges. You might have fewer bidders, which has been an issue for us, you know, an area where we often get fewer bids than we would like to get. It does also exempt, essentially, the workers are signing away their rights to the Wicks Law. It's interesting.
Think about that.
Yes, yes. There's just a lot more to talk about, but I do think and hope that the new committee will continue to address this. And I probably also should have said goodbye in a way. I'm happy that I'm still continuing on the committee, and I'm happy to be turning it over to the able hands of Peter Stein. But I've really enjoyed it. It's been an interesting year, and I've chaired. Actually 2 years to have chaired the committee, and I've really enjoyed it, and I'm really, really glad that we have Jeff Smith on board and up and functioning now. Should be smooth sailing into the future.
Thank you, Carol. Government Operations Committee, Julie Kiefer, Chair.
We met Friday the 11th, and I reported to the committee, and I want to report to the legislature that although the legislative chair had given GO a charge for 2012 to look into the possibility of appointing rather than electing a county clerk, we did not complete that charge. So I don't have a final report, but I want to tell you a little bit about where things are. We made a good beginning. We didn't bring it to conclusion. We gathered background information about the history of the office and its duties. And in general, we agree that the position is best described as administrative rather than policy setting, so that it makes at least theoretical sense for it to be a professional appointive position. The county clerk carries out a number of duties specified in state law. But the county clerk needs to have the legislature approve of spending initiatives. So the clerk and her staff have significant interaction with the public, which we all know. And we're fortunate to have incumbents who handle that very well. As with all county elective offices, there's no formal job description per se, but the clerk follows what the clerk is told to do in state law. If it came to the point of appointing a county clerk, whatever job description we would come up with, I'm sure the present incumbents, would fill the bill just fine and would qualify. But as soon as our incumbent clerk learned of this committee charge, she began to seek support from her peers and her state association to convince us to keep the job elective. We got a number of communications advising us it would be wrong and likely illegal to change the office from elective to appointive. Some of the communications raised questions about the language in the New York State Constitution with respect to both the clerk and with respect to provision of a DMV office. We still, if this is to be pursued, we need more in-depth study of various legal questions, including language specific to DMVs, and clarification about whether, as a charter county, we can just decide to do things our own way. I want to point out to you all that times do change. We don't have an elected coroner anymore. We have countywide assessment. Those were big steps when they happened. And looking at other New York State counties, we see that Westchester County has a Department of Public Safety Services, which is headed by a commissioner slash sheriff. The elective sheriff's job has been given to an appointed commissioner. So during 2012, at some point, each member of the committee agreed that, as I said, our position of county clerk could qualify as an appointed position. By the end of the year, different members were in different places. Two members felt that even if it were appropriate, appointment would not be worth pursuing because of likely legal challenges and the cost and time it would take to defend any suit. Another member felt that even though appointment makes some theoretical sense, it's just not right to take away people's ability to elect someone. And the two other members believe the study should be completed. If not by the 2013 GO committee, then more appropriately, I think, by the Charter Review Committee, which I now see is going to come into being this year. So you all are up to date on what we did and didn't do. And I don't have any other report.
Thank you very much, Julie. I appreciate that explanation. Are there any questions? Jim?
Not a question.
Okay. Any questions about what Julie has discussed? Okay.
What I would like to do is propose a resolution to change the February 5th, 2013 legislature meeting, which begins at 5:30, to January 29th at 5:30. That 29th meeting would replace the February 5th meeting, and I would move that.
Are you moving to reconsider the resolution that's in your packet?
Yes.
Okay. This
and
is
that resolution is number 2013-2.
Seconded by Brian. Okay. So that's a motion to reconsider. We passed this at our last meeting.
Right.
So and it was unanimous. So anybody is legally able to suggest it. So discussion. Brian.
Yeah. This obviously came about because of the NYSAC conference in February, and I would just caution us or whoever us is going to be next year to keep those in mind when we do these right from the beginning. There's a couple times a year, so that's it.
Right. Thank you. Pam?
I just, out of curiosity, I was wondering if there's any problem with our having the first meeting of the month the month before. I mean, I don't know if our charter says anything, speaks to that at all. Perhaps not.
I think it's up to us by resolution to establish the meeting dates. Right, Kathy? So, okay. Dooley?
I hope that someone will put on the record more than Brian just said about it. It's come about because of NYSAC. I think that there are three legislators going to that meeting, which conflicts with our first meeting in February. And I know that we have had many legislative meetings where we've been short some number of people. I also wonder if there's a way to, if the majority wants to change this, to do it other than amending the resolution that you're suggesting be reconsidered. If that stood, could we not simply have a resolution changing something without amending that resolution? I'm curious about procedure.
Have a resolution changing something?
If the answer to Pam's question is the first meeting of the month doesn't have to be in that month. It can be the previous month. If the answer is yes, then is it necessary to change the resolution that was adopted unanimously? Is there an alternative? Could one just make a motion to change that one meeting without revising the initial one? That's a question of process.
I don't know. Jonathan, is that something where if somebody made a motion, I mean, we want to...
Which is what I thought Jim was actually doing.
Right. Do you have a sense of what's the preferable way?
I'm not sure. I'm not really sure what difference it makes, to be honest, at this point. I mean, the effect is the same thing.
And then the record will be clear that what the meetings were. Is there a problem, Julie? What's the question?
I had two questions. One was, I thought Jim was essentially making a motion, and you corrected him. He should be reconsidering this. And I wasn't sure yet that you had to go through that. That was one question. The other was, it depended on, having the record show it's being moved because three legislators will be absent. That's my understanding.
Okay. Peter?
Yeah, well, it's more restrictive to do it that way, because if you introduce a new resolution, then it has to be recommended by more than a majority of the people. But this is the motion to reconsider is always in order, so it doesn't require anything special.
And I think the issue here is not simply absences, because, you know, people are absent all the time, but it's being absent for official county business, and the administrator will also be at that conference. And it's a good point that the dates are sent out by NYSAC some months ahead, and next time we'll check it. You know, we didn't do it this time, and we will check that in the future. Was there other discussion? Ready to vote on the motion to reconsider. And now, if this passes, then it's on the floor to reconsider and to be further amended. All right. All in favor of reconsidering resolution 2013-2, please raise your hand.
Aye.
12 opposed? 3. Okay. 12-3. So this motion's on the floor. So we're reconsidering this motion. Carol?
Yeah, so I happen to have a conflict that night. I'll change it if I need to, but to satisfy Pam's question, or maybe to make it moot, is there another night that same week that we were supposed to meet anyway that would fit better in terms of all our resolutions that we bring from various committees and would work for people after they got back from the NYSAC conference?
The week of February 5th? Well, the
right.
the conference goes through the Wednesday night we would be back. But, you know, Carol, when we realized this problem, this conflict, because the January 29th date is essentially a fifth week of the month, which happens, you know, a number of months during the year, that was the option that we sent out to everybody and had very few conflicts that... In terms of respecting each other, it was something that most people said, sure, that's fine. So this is the legal way to do it.
There were three conflicts, I believe?
There are four. If we're counting Joe, which I think...
No, I'm talking about there were three conflicts with the new date as well. People had other meetings they have to leave early for?
No. Two would have to leave by 7:30 or 8 or 6, 7:15, something like that. Frank, and then Jim?
I was aware of... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. We look a lot alike.
Go ahead, Jim.
I'll be.
I'm dumbfounded. Go ahead.
Martha, just to pick up on what you just said, it's my understanding when you or Kathy sent that email around that the majority of the more than just a simple majority of the legislature could and. Make this change to the 29th. And this is only a one-time change, as
right.
I understand. It's not a permanent change.
And it's two full weeks from now.
So do we need to poll everybody to see if there's still a majority number that can make that?
Well, at the moment, there's actually no motion to amend. There's no... Somebody would have to take, say, I'm reconsidering it, and I move to amend this so that February 5th says January 29th, or something like that.
May I do that?
Sure.
I would move that we amend the county legislative meeting of February. We move to amend the meeting date of February 5th in
with respect to the individuals who can't make it that at that time, to meet for the legislature to meet on the 29th of January, 2013.
All right, second by Peter. So the amendment to the resolution is simply to cross out February 5th and put in January 29th, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Jim and then Peter.
Is that okay, Jonathan?
When I started this out, and obviously got it done the wrong way, but we're where I thought I wanted to be, and I was clearly aware of the fact that there were people who said they would have to leave at 7:30 or wanted. So, interestingly enough, it could be a test case for a meeting beginning at 5:30 and hopefully getting done near that 7:30 time. So I am going to support this.
That's where our similarity ends, Jim.
Peter?
Unfortunately, I missed that because I was reading this mysterious note, but I'm hoping not to repeat what Jim says, but there was an extensive poll taken which said that that date, which date I've now forgotten, the 29th, was the one that only one person couldn't make, and then that one person said, well, she could make it, so I don't think there's a better day. That's my memory of all of the emails that went around.
And Peter, that's exactly what Jim said.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. please forgive me.
I can help myself.
He can go back. Like he can go back and check the tape.
I mean, you stop that. Right. You have to jump on.
Want to call the question,
Carol?
Yeah. Can I just ask, just by a quick show of hands, would people be able to do it on the 31st? No. Let's say, who can't do it on the 31st?
Point of order.
Okay, then I won't move to amend.
Okay, are we ready to vote on Kathy Lewis?
I just want to check with Jonathan to find out whether this proposed method is okay or if there's any problems with it.
No, the proposed method is okay, but I was looking at the rules, and it does say the legislature shall reserve the authority to change any meeting date by majority vote of the whole legislature. So it could have been done another way, but this is the way the clerk recommended, and it seems a perfectly fine way to do it.
Thank you.
Actually, so what that says is, for example, we're going to do this. If we do this tonight, a motion to reconsider wouldn't, after the next meeting, the motion to reconsider would not be available to us because you have to do it the next meeting. So if something happens in March and we have to change the August meeting, we can just do that with a majority vote.
Yes.
On a motion? Or does that need to be a resolution?
It actually doesn't say.
Okay.
But I would think, you know, you have the notice requirements of noticing the meeting and stuff, so it would make sense to do it by resolution.
Okay. Brian?
I guess that's my question, and, you know, pick a date between now and, you know, whenever, April 2nd. Let's say there's a blizzard or something, and we just can't get here. But you have to meet. It would seem as though, I mean, we all have email and say, hey, look at in 2 days, this is going to be gone. We have business we need to conduct. Can everybody make it? Instead of going through all this, I mean,
there are different procedures for an emergency meeting. So, for example, the chair can call an emergency meeting. That's not what this is. So, Jim.
I was going to say that.
You were going to what?
The chair of the legislature can call for a meeting on a 48-hour notice, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's covered.
All right, we're ready to vote on this amendment. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed. That passes 13-2. All right, thank you very much. Anything else on your report today? All set? Okay. I would suggest that when the Charter Review Committee gets set up, that the status of the county clerk should be something they should consider. They don't necessarily have to make a change or do another study or continue the study, but that would be on the list of things to look at. Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee, Will Burbank, Chair.
Well, the Planning Development and Environmental Committee
committee is about to become disappear into history, but there will be one more meeting. It will be happening this Friday at the 3:30 time. And we will be discussing the Biggs property, the authorizing the aquifer study, and most probably substantively considering the report of the funding, the TCAD funding task force, which exists in hard copy form. Joe, do we have other copies of this, or do I have the one?
As of today, PDAC got it several days ago, and the rest of the legislature received it today.
Okay, thank you. So, if you want to come to the very last PDAC meeting, please join us. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Will. Any questions? All right. Broadband Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes. I did hear that now it may be next week instead of this week, but nobody really knows for sure, so I'm not making any guarantees of when we're going to hear about this grant. So, and we're still anxiously awaiting. We do have a subcommittee of people who are working very diligently on a plan that would encourage people who live in rural areas who might not have had the opportunity to develop computer skills to provide education and support that would help to encourage them to adopt and to subscribe to broadband services when they do become available. So we're going to have a visitor this time from the state library system. The state library system does have a curriculum to do just such things as this, to, you know, educate people about how to use their computers and other devices. So we're going to learn more about that at our meeting, which will be on January 28th at 5 at the Borg Warner Room, and it's an open meeting for anyone who would like to attend.
Thanks very much, Pat. Any questions? All right, the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you. We are meeting the 28th, and at 3:30 this time with the older committee, or last year's committee, the new committee, I'm hoping we can meet at 4 o'clock to satisfy some of the needs of the members that we have. The new committee will, I have lost Mike Lane and gained Leslie McBean Clairborn on the new committee, and I look forward to the year with many things still on the agenda to do fiscal, changing the 5% to 10%.
The fund balance.
On the reserve fund.
Reserve fund. Yeah.
And I was going to say fiscal cliff, but that's already been used. I'm hoping that, we can do the things that we've done in the past and get it done in an efficient way. I'm looking forward to some of the things we have to do over the next 12 months. So thank you very much, and that would conclude my report today.
Thanks very much, Jim.
Let me just say one more thing. I'm also the chair of the search for a new director of finance, and I have not given any reports on that. We are now down to 12 final candidates. We have sent out a question that they have to answer, and they will be getting that answer back to us within the next week, 10 days, and the committee will get together and review the answers, and then the process will continue on at that point. We had initially 24 applications. We are down to roughly 12 now. So stay tuned. It will be moving forward, and hopefully we can find a replacement for David at who is equally as good, and David will help bring that person along, whoever it may be, before he finally leaves county employment.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions on that?
That's an essay question, not true false, right?
Yeah, right. It's an essay question, not a true false, not objective. It's We had a group of people on the committee that got together and put that question together, and it's challenging. It's a challenging question, and we are hoping greatly that we will get the kind of answer that we're looking for. So it's an interesting process, and I have some really fine people, legislators, outside community members who are part of that committee also.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions on that process? All right, thank you. Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Nothing to report since the last meeting. My colleague Brian and I have exchanged roles. I'm going to sit over there and he's going to sit over here. But other than that, the committee, I'm sure, will proceed to consider the business that's carry forward the business that's on the agenda and find new things to do.
Thank you, Peter. Public Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McGinn Claiborne, Chair.
Well, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee has not changed its name, is not moving its time, haven't swapped roles with anybody, although Joe and I are talking about it. Anyhow, we will be meeting on Wednesday, the 20-something of January, 23rd. At 3:30, I want to jump up and take credit for a grant that we received as we continue the work of Workforce Diversity, but I can't because Paul is in the room. So no, this has been a wonderful process. Workforce Diversity is taking seriously the results of our climate survey, workplace climate survey. And there are some action items coming out of that, one of which is a follow-up conversation. So I want to invite Paula, since she's here and she, stuck around for this, to share with all of us the process for the grant and what we will be doing with it. Ms. Paula?
Thanks, Leslie. I know you all have been sitting for a while, and it's close to that break, so I will make this brief. But good evening and also congratulations. This is an opportunity to work with the New York Council for the Humanities. It was established in 1975 as a nonprofit and the sort of sole statewide proponent, if you will, for moving forward the diversity issues, cultural competency issues, civic awareness issues. So they were just an excellent partner for the kinds of things that we're trying to do here in the county and specifically with the county workforce and offering some alternatives to standard training. And all of you received a proposal a couple of months back where we are wanting to establish a pilot program beginning this spring. We are calling it our Reading and Discussion Program. It will be centered around one text, which is called the Civically Engaged Reader. It's roughly about 40-some-odd readings that cover the span of literature and philosophy. But they are designed to invite reflection as well as discussion about civic service and how that connects to the human experience. And we thought that this was both an excellent text as well as a good way to, as we've termed, strengthening the conversation on diversity and inclusion within the county workforce. So the big plus in this is although the council uses the term grant, they are granting us permission to use their model in our environment. They will be also, as a part of the grant, paying for our facilitator, which is Dr. John Sheehan. He is currently a professor at TC3, historian, noted studies in anthropology and sociology, and is just an excellent candidate to help facilitate these discussions. He is in Ireland right now, but he's coming back at the end of the week, and he has been notified that he won, both in terms of being our facilitator and also helping me move forward with this opportunity. We do have a small coordination committee or coordinating committee, which includes Marsha Lynch as well as Sean Martel Moore. I am open to taking other volunteers if you would like. We also have a young man from Ithaca College, Matt Orama, who's serving as a volunteer intern, who's also going to be helping us with the outreach and so forth to educate all staff on this opportunity. So the last thing I will say is that when I talked to the representative from the council, she said that this was the first award of its kind to a local government entity, and that the council is extremely excited about working with us. And I think this is great for us to start to establish this relationship that maybe we can look to future funding opportunities to forward the work of WDIC. So thank you, Leslin, for allowing me this opportunity to speak on this, and thanks all of you for your support.
That's terrific, Paul. We look forward to that. That sounds great.
And for the record, I mean, there's a timeline that's established on and how we go about this, and we're looking at the discussion, the reading and discussion sessions to occur somewhere between March and June, four sessions, and you all will stay tuned for more information on it. Thank you, Paul. I couldn't have said it any better. There are a couple of other things I want to mention. I appreciate the work that's being done through Marsha's Public Information Advisory Board. I think I said that right. And the county website. And, you know, some of the things I've been hearing on discussion around that. And it occurred to me as I was looking at the county website just last night, looking for information about the county's mission, its values, things around diversity and inclusion, that there is a WDIC logo, the diversity logo, and one can click on it and see the statement. I was realizing that it's hard to really sort of get to those other things that say to people who we are and what we're about and what's our purpose. So I'm looking forward to the new website design that will have some of those things, so when people look at us, they know that this is a county that takes its diversity initiative seriously, that takes its purpose seriously, and folks can immediately find that information. So I just wanted to share that. The other thing is, it's beautiful that COFA has moved into this building. Joe and I have been having some conversations, email, and Joe continued with our county historian, Carol Kemen, around just noting that the facility in which COFA has now moved into has some, as always with African American history and history of the slavery institution, it has some history around the Underground Railroad, and we hope to have that highlighted on that facility. May not happen for the ribbon cutting, but at some point we hope to have a plaque information installed with somewhere on that facility to say that this was potentially, well, I'm not going to say potentially, it was a site on the Underground Railroad and a site where runaway slaves found some refuge. So we're continuing to work on that, and I'm very excited about making a big deal out of that when we get to that point. So I just wanted to share that as well. And that's my report.
Thank you so much, Leslin. That's all great news. Appreciate it. Any questions for Leslin? Brian.
This really isn't WDIC, but I do have a question for you, Leslin. Saturday, the MLK breakfast. I've gone down the last several years and served on the line. I think Joe and I take turns handing out sausage or something, as I recall. But do you need more volunteers?
We always need volunteers at the MLK breakfast. I don't know about Joe handing out sausages. He eats them.
You got to test them.
but anywhere from 7 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the day, we welcome volunteers for cooking, serving, and cleanup. Because it's the largest community event, and it is a WDIC. You know, it's a diversity issue. It's the largest community event celebrating the life and legacy of Dr. King. And so we welcome volunteers to join us. Shifts run like from 7 to, you know, 8:30, then 8:30 to 11:30, and 11:30 on. Breakfast is served from 9 to 11:30. So come on down, get on the line, you know, pancakes and sausages and all that stuff to be served. Will is also being there, so. Thank you, Brian, for bringing it up.
All right, thanks thanks very much, Leslyn. I will move us to the minutes. Do we have a motion on the minutes of January 3rd, 2013? Moved by Frank, seconded by somebody. Seconded by Pam. Any discussion? All in favor of the the January 3rd minutes? Please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is 13 to 2. They pass. I would like to call a recess. Yeah?
The word minutes reminded me of something I should have said as part of the GO report, if I may now.
Sure.
At GO, we did not propose any changes to the minutes policy. We discussed a little bit how they're working, but we did support the concept of having minutes and notes, hard copies, attached to a committee agenda if the committee wants it. And I wanted to let the new committees know that that seemed like a reasonable thing to do, since the notes often contain information that reminds you what you're supposed to be talking about at the meeting.
Are you saying the committee chair would ask that if they choose to have their committee get the notes?
At GO, we felt that that was a reasonable option for committees to consider, not the committee chair, but the committee, if it seems
okay.
Useful.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We didn't vote yet, right? Did we vote?
Yeah.
We did. Oh, I was about to say recess. We have an executive session. We have a couple of items, and then after that, we'll need to take time to get your schedules our committee schedules organized. So let's please be back in our seats at 5 of. I don't expect to take any action after the executive session. I need a motion.
Motion.
Move for to go into executive session for labor negotiations and a personnel issue and litigation. Second by Brian. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That sounds unanimous. All right. We're on break.
You're okay with the 4 o'clock?
Sorry about that. Jim.